You're listening to KKUP Cupertino 91.5 FM, and it's time for the Vibrational Voyage program. First thing I really want to do is say hello. It's wonderful to be with y'all. I want to thank you for listening, whether it's by design or accident. Thanks for being here. We've got some wonderful music and discussion tonight, all about what's going on in the heavens and in us. We got a great guest who's going to kind of share some insights and experiences, some connections. You'll meet him in just a few minutes. So thanks for joining in. I'm happy to welcome my guest tonight. I'm going to give him an intro in just a minute. But I wanted to also acknowledge some other wonderful assistance that I've had over the last few months. If you're a regular listener on Tuesday night, you know that I got completely busy with a project that I was working on. And I had the great good fortune to have an immense amount of support and help from several friends. And during that entire expanse from, oh God, I think it started sometime in October until just the week before last. Michael Berry was here sitting in, and Rich Grungieri, who you've heard many times, and he's a good friend. And I want to really acknowledge his effort, his energy, his contribution, his time spent with us here. Great amount of devotion and enthusiasm for what KKUP is all about. Somebody who definitely actively puts his energy where his feet are, and comes and does a marvelous job, especially as a brand new guy, doing some great programming. So I want to really thank him and acknowledge him for all the great effort over these last couple of months. And I want to thank Michael Berry for his dedicated support and help in working with Rich and in being a wonderful friend and a supporter for KKUP all around, but also a very helpful and thoughtful supporter of me personally. So I want to just say thank you. So I want to also say thank you to all of you out there who have been listening and enjoying what's been going on. You're like the family here. And I want to, you know, just say, as you probably know well, KKUP is completely listener supported. So your participation, your contributions, your support in every way is what KKUP is all about. And if it remains that way, KKUP will be a wonderful part of this community. Let's hope it stays that way. Let's hope that this radio station continues to be a voice of the community, of people who have great love and passion to share from our community. And unfortunately, sometimes people can mistake enthusiasm for something else. And that's unfortunate. Terribly unfortunate. But I don't want to drag us down. I do want to introduce another member of the family, someone that you've heard before if you've been a devoted listener to the Vibrational Voyage program. He is a great friend and adventurer, and also a supporter of KKUP as well. His name is Bo Toyotti, and he's been doing a lot of wonderful creative stuff in the greater community, the greater Bay Area. And he has tonight come here to share some of his experience and his insight and his music related to what's going on right now in the world, and in our experience and in creativity.
Let me just say welcome. Rich, how you doing? Or,
Bo. I was thinking of Rich there.
How are you?
Bo, how you doing? How you doing, man?
Well, I want to thank you for being here tonight and for
keeping the KKUP people aware.
Yeah, so I want to say welcome.
Thank you.
And we've known each other for a good number of years, like 2004.
Right.
And in all that time, there's been a whole bunch of wonderful things that you and I have enjoyed getting to know. It's things that we both have great interest in. And we have a great, wonderful time conversing about this stuff.
Really
do. Every time.
Really do.
I mean, there's not one conversation
we've
we built, have
we've
that
built
doesn't
a,
go
We've
somewhere.
Built a couple of artistic projects together.
Yes.
So we built something called The Urge.
Yeah.
That was our first band. So now we're reforming our band. One of the intern bands was called the Hunabku Travel Society. And so this current project is called the Zolkin Project. And I'd like to tell everyone in KKUP land that my friend Tony McGannigan is a very important part of this sound that you're hearing now. His research into the Mayan cosmology in particular. So the album is called The Zolkin Sound.
Mm-hmm.
And the Zolkin Sound Project at this point.
Well, tell us a little bit about how that evolved, because this is something I'm very familiar with. I know that nobody else here has had the benefit of hearing all of those discussions that we've had.
Well, okay. Well, let's start off. Like, I'm sure a lot of people are hearing about 2012.
Yes.
Right? So sure. The 2012 phenomena. Yeah, is in motion, and it concerns the pyramid building Mayan culture, and they there's a prophecy that emerges, but it's prophetic, and I recently found out that Nostradamus is into 2012 too, there's some important writings about it, so you could start off with John Major Jenkins. And his book on myocosmogenesis.
Right.
And so the Earth has a precessionary cycle that has brought the center of the galaxy, right, into a certain kind of astronomical alignment.
Right.
Then you couple that, I think, with a lot of the Earth changes we see. There's a lot going on. So you have Earth changes, and you have a sense that there's an alignment going on. Right, and so there are alignments going on all the time. This alignment feels kind of special relative to the Earth, and its wobble, bringing a relationship between the solstice sun and the center of the galaxy into a certain precise kind of alignment.
Right,
and then we look around the world and we say, "This is a momentous time." So we've composed these pieces of music, and these pieces of music are leaning on an interpretation of the Mayan calendar, the Zolkin.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we heard a little bit of that music right at the beginning of our evening here. So why don't you tell everybody about that particular piece of music, the stuff that we played to start with.
So the Mayan calendar, right, is the Zolkin, their sacred timekeeping, right? It is built around a creational story. So they follow, their days follow a certain cosmic blueprint, and there's a certain meaning to them. This first day is called Imix.
Mm-hmm.
So we're chanting Imix, and we've integrated modern digital equipment with analog singing and playing to try and create a context, right? A context of us in Western civilization trying to come to grips with what this era might be about.
Right.
And including the 2012 idea.
Right. Let's see. You are listening to KKUP Cupertino 91.5 FM. And this is the Vibrational Voyage Program. Got a guest here. He's sharing his music tonight and some perspectives on what's going on currently in our experience, and also what's coming soon. What are some of these intersections that we're moving through and into as we go through what's happening?
It would involve an alignment, I think, to the galactic plane and the galactic center.
Yeah.
There will be a movement that seeks to understand that way. You know, there's some great science starting to come around on this idea.
Right.
But, you know, that's one issue. We've also been creating the context of a celebration of a musical phenomena around the idea. And so I think one of the things you and I did in particular was the power of chanting.
Right.
The power of words intoned with a certain feeling and a certain consciousness. One thing that would be powerful would be in a shamanic context or an Aboriginal context. The chanting of certain words and then the comprehension of our relationship in the cosmos. For example, with some of the key astronomical bodies would obviously be the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun.
Right.
Right? And then the planets emerge, and then the Milky Way emerges.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The chanting of key kinds of syllables and sounds with the intention of coming into a certain kind of unison with the cosmos around us,
right,
would be a very powerful shamanic kind of rite.
Well, it would set a stage for a kind of experience, a kind of resonance. And the thing that seems to be so noticeable in what's going on right now is that there are these different connections, different resonances, and different places where a little bit of creativity or light is emerging. Or like, you know, we were talking earlier tonight a little bit about crop circles. The way that the information is now exploding out of that phenomena, it's like we've been exposed to it heavily for what? I think 93 was the first crop circle that wasn't just a circle. It was around 93.
Yeah, you know, gosh.
15 years.
You know,
no, the 17 years.
Just the art. The fact that much precision in art could be implemented into these phenomena.
Yeah.
Deserves. It reminds me in a way of like the discussion argument. Like, did, for example, Carlos Castaneda,
uh-huh,
did he write it?
Uh-huh.
It's a great piece of art.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like the rabble about his credulity, well, gosh, you know, pound for pound, he was a great writer and he brought a fantastic teaching to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the crop circles are a fantastic manifestation. And, you know, if you ask me personally, my feeling is that it reminds me of the Flatland story,
uh-huh,
right?
Yeah.
The Flatland story is a wonderful book by a mathematician,
uh-huh,
where Flatlanders see three-dimensional objects as two-dimensional.
Okay.
Objects, right? Because they live on flat land.
Oh, right.
So what I think with the math, well, I think the author's name escapes me. I'm sorry. Who has Google? We'll be expecting a phone call.
Yeah, we don't have the computer up in here yet.
Well, that's the next level.
Welcome.
That's the next level.
They're working on them.
But we're three-dimensional. And so this becomes like a Jungian argument, right?
Hmm.
That synchronicities are potentially the manifestations of larger dimensional kinds of events that are strangely connected in a higher dimensional context.
Yeah.
We're running around three-dimensional.
Right.
One thing about shamanic cultures is that generally when a people have lived for a long, long time, they really start to strive for higher comprehension.
Yeah.
I that argument exists.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's evidenced in the connections that they make.
Hmm.
And it's amazing because we're fascinated with what they have to share with us today. It's a living, it's a perennial insight, a perennial wisdom and philosophy. You know, a true connection.
It's not going to go away either. The whoever built those pyramids. So there's some important authors. I think John Major Jenkins has done some important work. I'm a great fan of Jose Arguelles just for his artistry and his breakthrough cosmology. Mm-hmm. Carl Johan Kalaman has written some important books. And what he's identified is what the pyramids are mathematically.
Yeah.
So
the Mayan pyramids.
The Mayan pyramid. All the pyramids.
All of them?
Well, his specialty is in his focus is on the Mayans. But I mean, there's wonderful geomancy with the Egyptian pyramids. We're just not focused on them right now.
Right.
I don't want to be dissing the Egyptians.
No, but there's one particular pyramid that he focuses in on. It was a story that I saw. It was not difficult to digest or even just present it on the internet. And it was pretty plain. It was just the text. And it was pretty cool. It related to how the levels, the steps in the pyramids relate to these different epochs. And they're geometric. And in their relationship, in terms of their total size in time space,
and apparently there's some mathematical accuracy.
Yeah,
that you start with a 16 billion year old universe,
okay,
give or take, right? And you divide by 20, and you get 800 million years. So what he's saying is that at the beginning of the universe, you have a fantastic phenomena take place. The universe is born.
Right.
Then 800 million years ago, you have another quantum leap of evolution. Life emerges. Right. You know, and he does take on traditional science. It just in the sense that he's saying 19th century theories are 19th century theories.
They're not big enough yet.
Well, you know, let's keep looking, you know what I mean? And keep what works. Like, we didn't throw Newton away when Einstein, you know, wrote the theories of relativity, right? And as we've discovered that the quantum world is different than our world. The macrocosmic world functions in another way again, right? So we don't have all the physics to explain the far reaches of the universe,
right?
Same way, we might have a little bit more research to do before we can call evolutionary theory a closed book. So what he's saying with the pyramid is that you go from 16 billion years to 800 million years and you have a leap into life. Then you divide by 20 again, right? And you go from 800 million years to 40 million years and you go from cells to mammals. And then you keep going, you eventually arrive at the human being. And then the rest of the steps of the pyramid trace the progression of humanity from chaotic tribal levels through the written word.
It's like a fractal.
It's
history.
A fractal. And then eventually you arrive at 1750, you arrive at 1999, and then you arrive at
2012
through a geometric progression of the pyramid. So it's very interesting research, you know. And so then what happens in 2012? Well, I'd like to think that we survive, and 10 days later we end up in 2013.
And you have some interesting feelings and thoughts about the significance of that, and just numerically. I mean, that was one of the first things you pointed out to me, that you know, it's 2013
is it's almost like a cosmic laugh. Arguelles liked to take this view of Pakal Votan and the deep Mayan philosophers, that they never really died. That's a thesis. You know, a lot of older cultures and older philosophies hold that, you know, we energy isn't created or destroyed.
Right.
It just,
there's conservation.
Yeah. Energy changes shape.
Yeah.
So when we're not held in this form, we transcend. you know, especially if we're that level of yogi, you mm-hmm. could argue, right? Mm-hmm. So Pakalvotan is a very important figure mm-hmm. and basically considered the last great Mayan king mm-hmm. In Buddhist terms. We might say that Pakalvotan was a larger cosmic entity, mm-hmm. Maybe not quite Quetzalcoatl, mm-hmm. but definitely like a Buddha level of consciousness, incarnated in the Mayan civilization, and brought the pyramidal language and their mathematics and their view of time, mm-hmm. and also. Their view of the power of the human spirit and being, mm-hmm. that human beings can enter into the moment. There's a fantastic power locked up in the right relationship mm-hmm. that a human being can have with momentary being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like experience itself. Is a doorway wherever we go, whatever we participate in, if we attend to it with the real life and energy that's present there. Thing is, for long, long, long time, we haven't paid attention to it. We haven't recognized it. We haven't felt it. There's something more that seems to be apparent in our experience. To me, it's happening already. There's stuff that's going on. There are other qualities, you could say, and other parts of experience that are starting to make themselves recognized. And, you know, it can be real simple stuff, too. It's like I notice more when I listen to music, like listening to your music tonight. I'm hearing more. I notice more in the shades of the music and the way things interact. But I notice more, too, with people. In situations and the way things work together. And so there's this place that experience kind of becomes a doorway to more of what's happening. Our experience, there's more of it, and we're getting introduced to it. You're listening to KKUP Cupertino 91.5 FM. Let's give them a little bit more music.
All right.
What should we dive into next?
Let's go for the second e-mix. So the first e-mix, Certain View.
And which track is that?
This is track number 2.
Okay.
So we introduced the female voice.
All righty.
Thank you.
you are. You are listening to KKUP Cupertino, 91.5 FM. And this is a piece of music that's connected with the sacred energy of the galaxy. And also with time and space and the dynamics of time and space. And with the Mayan calendar. And Bo's been working on this for a long time, kind of pulling it together. And it's kind of evolving over time a bit as well. And I even got to participate a little bit in this one. It was great fun. And I still enjoy hearing, you know, what it is and how it works and kind of getting the feel, because the vibration of the days is what these musical pieces are really all about. So maybe we'll get Bo to tell us a little bit about this. What do you call this one again?
That one is the first day.
E-Meeks.
E-Meeks. I-M-I-X. Much love to my bandmates, obviously Tony. McGettigan is a part of our ensemble. Paradiso Tartarisi. Much love, Perry D. Then we have Gavin Morell. And then we have Bob Love. We have the singer Love. Alan Sitar Brown. Just a few of the people. Adam Coopersmith. So Derek Backstrom is one of our engineers. Fine group of people.
Well, one of the things that makes that work is because there was a time when, you know, for many weeks in a row, we would get together and kind of, you know, play around and jam. You have this wonderful studio space in your home, and your home is a pretty cool place too, over in La Honda.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, and
thank you very much.
So it's this place where people can come,
right?
And a person who connects you and me is Taj Ali,
right?
Taj Ali. And Taj Ali was such an encourager. I mean, he even encouraged me to kind of get on to music a little bit.
Frankly, yes. So when we mentioned the people who are involved with the Zolkin Project, Taj Ali.
He runs through a lot of it.
He runs through because he brought us all together.
Yeah.
Paradiso, yourself, yes. and also our buddy, our buddy Bob Evans, you know. Brought us all together.
Yeah. Right.
And Kenny Elfin. So all of that's a crew of people, and we've been making music for a while. We honor Taj because we like to think about the genre that this music is striving for is cross genre'd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we kind of tribal trance, mm-hmm. ambient jam, mm-hmm. Taj. Much love, Taj.
What? I feel him occasionally, and I know when I hear you talk and Perry talk about him that you guys feel him running through.
You know,
so much of your life.
Like sound is akasha, right?
Yeah.
And so we're dealing with trying to feel the mind sound. So sound you bring people into sound, right? Sound has mystical, magical qualities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a sound current passing through.
That was one of the things that he taught us about.
Bringing people, like once you realize that you can sit in the pocket of music,
yeah,
like you can sit in there's a rhythmic pocket and you can hang out, and then you can hang out in tonality.
Uh-huh.
So you start hitting tones, and you know you hang out there,
right?
And then you learn how to just subtly just be in key, and basically on the beat, right?
Right,
and. It doesn't need to get too much more complex than that. Well, there's a little practice. Yeah, we like to be good at anything, but yeah.
Well, he was so artful. Not only the way that he would get into the groove,
right,
with the drum, he would sing too, and that was uh-huh. great. But the way that he would get an audience
uh-huh.
going, and the way that everybody just loved to respond to what he was doing. You felt a part of the music. You felt like that radiated right through you.
And you know, there's a lot of great research going on right now in 2012.
Yeah.
But I also see a really great sign. I see a lot of grassroots festivals
yeah.
emerging all over the place. I heard about one in Cleveland.
Mm.
Obviously the Santa Cruzians being the special, special friends that they are. Love to you out there in Santa Cruz, baby. Feeling you. You know,
yeah.
But there's a 2012 movement going on there. You know, Marin's going to be kicking in with their crazy selves.
Yeah.
And basically, wherever there's a a hippie culture.
Okay.
like Northern Cal has a lot of hippie.
Yeah.
You know, remnants.
Yeah.
Now I'd like to think that we're bringing it into the 21st century. You know.
Yeah. Well, some people would say, you know, why do you want to dig that up? You know, and it's so superfluous and so artificial and superficial to what's really going on, our serious needs and problems today. What are we going to do about this stuff?
Right, right, right.
But there is something. This is a very practical thing because it's not just about a celebration or a party or a good time. It's not. It's about how we really work together.
It's not just a title. It's a way of life. Everybody's invited. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's the thing, too. It does invite all kinds of participation. And I think it doesn't realize how much it includes every kind of participation.
It reminds me of Krishnamurti. What you just said reminds me of Krishnamurti.
Hmm.
You know, and he presented the very kind of a Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King approach to political change and political life.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to know about what's going on and to have a stance. But when it comes time for action, we kind of have to help each other being enlightened people.
Mm-hmm.
Dalai Lama has been talking about compassion,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a while now. And that's my take on his approach to 2012. It's a time of compassion.
Yeah.
That works into the Krishnamurti theory.
Okay.
That it's really hard to change the world if you don't change the way people think and about the way they feel in their hearts.
Right.
If we wake up our compassion body,
yeah.
And the best way to do that is to get involved and to sing and dance too. Don't forget to sing and dance because that's ecstasy.
Well,
that's getting back to the moment.
Yes.
That's getting back to really being able to release.
Well, it's funny because this is a movement that I don't think has fully recognized itself yet as a movement. And what came to me there a minute ago that I said, it had not really occurred to me in that way before. It just kind of came out that the movement doesn't recognize the power yet that it has.
Mm.
I heard that once about art,
uh-huh.
that a great art city like Paris knows it's a great art city because it resonates and it gets such wonderful feedback.
It existed in time.
Well,
you know, time is a matter. I read recently that Mayan, right?
Yeah.
Means one of the definitions of Mayan means 260 years.
Okay.
Just that. Now, the Mayans were fantastic astronomers, mathematicians. So what they mean by 260 years is, you know, that amount of time for a culture, then they became the Mayans. They resonated. They survived that long. They saw that number of changes, and they saw that number of moons go around the Earth.
Mm.
They kept track. They were astronomers. They didn't build pyramids to just look at. The pyramids were also places of contemplation, meditation. And one thing that they would study when you built the when you build a pyramid, it was an astronomical observatory.
Mm-hmm.
You pay attention. This is where Major Jenkins comes in. His very strong thesis that they paid attention to the rising and falling of the background stars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they do. Why? Well, the precession is not a completely ironed out issue. But there's some mechanism in place that causes the background sky to rise and fall.
Right.
The planets are doing their thing up in front because the planets are much closer to the Earth. So the Milky Way is rising and falling. It's not rising and falling. The planet is in some kind of way.
Right.
So you have the precessionary wobbling top theory.
Yes.
They would observe this from the top of their pyramids and keep track of the planets. And that's what they did. They had numbers. I've seen estimates from 17 to 20.
Yeah.
Of different kinds of cycles. So they would keep track of, obviously, the moon, obviously, the seasons, and then the planets.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the interrelationships between the planets.
Yes.
This.
And they rendered them in this marvelously beautiful pattern, series of patterns.
Yeah, we can't do justice to it on the, you know, we can't do justice to their visual culture.
No.
just talking about.
But this conversation connects and is resonant with it. That's the thing that's also striking me, that the resonance is popping up everywhere. Mm. Everywhere I turn around and look. Now, there's plenty of ways to be distracted from it. But, you know, when you see all these different festivals popping up.
Right.
When you see a resurgence in creativity. Well, one of the things that seems to me, it's going on in the background. It's not really talked about very much. It was a big story when personal computers first came out. Mm-hmm. But they use them so much for business, we don't really think about it or pay attention to it. There is a massive worldwide movement going on in production. Mm. You can produce in your living room. You can have your own studio.
Albums.
You can write your own books. You can create your own movies. Yeah. There is this absolute...
Make your own cards, send them... And calendar.
And so, you know, of course, there's a lot of creativity, which is just, you know, it's just someone's passion expressing itself. But there's also an amazing amount of beautiful stuff.
Great material. So, like, this is true. And so as artists trying to put meaningful material together,
right?
You know, I come to the conclusion that... certain processes, for example, the musical process, need theater.
Hmm.
Because everybody's becoming so creative and we're moving perhaps toward hyper-creativity.
Hmm.
I mean, like the internet is hyper.
Hmm.
There's a hyper number of things going on right now compared to 25 years ago, right?
Right?
So we're moving into a different kind of dimensionality.
Right.
You know, and a way to participate with the era we live in is to create groups and to create community efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And theater does that. So Wagner said this about Beethoven.
Hmm.
I've got to do something dramatic because Beethoven has created the mountain. Beethoven's done it. Something to that effect, right? So Wagner moved into opera, right?
Hmm.
And made, you know, a great art, right? Hmm. And then so what are we trying to do with art today? Mm. I think that we're being asked, or we're being called upon to bring our art to the people in a more profound way.
Right.
And involve them.
Yeah.
And create a new kind of participate in this new festival atmosphere.
Yeah.
You could say that the festival atmosphere that we're trying to participate in has a simple premise.
Hmm.
What can we all do to create a better world? Just that.
Hmm.
Come to the table with an open heart,
mm-hmm,
about how to make a better world.
Yeah.
Not judgment.
Right.
I don't think you want to be specific. You can present something specific, but initially, how do we create a better world? And okay. So musicians and artists should be, I think, playing and gigging and jamming.
Yeah. It's been 20 years. It's been 20 years since Joseph Campbell became a force,
mm-hmm,
in our culture. That was really, had a big impact on me. I was recovering Catholic in those days.
The great authors help build the bridge, don't they? I think to spiritual.
He said the same thing about this process that we're in right now. He didn't know how to predict it, but he said something was possible, and the artists and the poets have to make the bridge, make the connection, make the space for something to emerge. Their work actually helps to put the pieces in place and to give us. He was talking about 20 years ago about the possibility of a new myth, but it would be a world myth, one that encompasses all perspectives, all people, in our relationship to the heavens.
Because mythology allows us to speculate, contemplate, meditate on the unknown.
Yeah.
And frankly, the unknown is a much larger set. Somebody disagrees, agrees, please call in. let's make a group dialogue. No, I'm sorry. Like, you present an idea, but basically, what humanity is aware of,
mm-hmm,
is a small fraction of the total universal picture.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
even of ourselves. That's the thing that's striking me. We know about history. We have this memory we think is the accurate story of where we've been and what we've been up to. But even that is a weak
sieve-like
facsimile.
The universe is mostly space. Mostly space between atoms. It's mostly a spatial, and that's our memory. Mostly space. You know? So, yeah, we have to strive then to arrive at a consideration of what someone like Campbell would be going for. Mythology allows us to think and reason and use analogies and metaphors to build from what we know and make analogies about what we don't know. Yeah. A very important process, and to do it in an artful way, you know what I mean, with beauty and aesthetic, is a part of the bridge. If people can approach something that's been put into some care has been put.
You know, it's an interesting connection related to what you were just describing. The more we get dialed in with everything that's going on here, all the difficult things and all the beautiful things, there is this process, because we get so deeply connected to what's really essentially here, it gives us a strength, and from which we start to infer with reasonable accuracy about what else is out there, because we are so connected with the resonance of what's here.
Right.
We start to know and get a feel for what's real and what's true in those greater dimensions.
That's an analogy builder. Oh, yeah. That's an interesting idea. So we understand a bit about how we operate here.
Yeah.
So we get a feel for it, and then there does seem to be in play a manifestation or resonance seems to be a real way in which the universe functions.
I think that's exactly what your work highlights, and I think that the calendar definitely highlights that, and your energetic connection to what the calendar is showing and what the sky gives us. That's the same kind of thing to me. It's the same kind of a connection. It's a connection between, like, the calendar itself is depicting actual astronomical events and phenomena, but it also relates us then to the
larger...
And
there are different kinds of ways to put the calendar together.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they really are looking at a 20-day count and a 13-day count, but you can do that in some different ways.
Yeah.
Like they have... Arguelles' work was to put it in a matrix form, and that seems to be one form where you build a 20 by 13 matrix. There are circular. I think everybody, you've seen...
The gears.
The gears and the large Aztec and calendars, which are reflections of the Mayan calendar. They put it in a circular form, which I think lays it on... Is it like a galactic mapping? You know, that would be a way to look at it. They also have, like... two wheels next to each other, and what these different cultural forms do is they take timekeeping and they put it in different modalities.
Right.
So you get back to the power of their number keeping in different ways, and that builds a different meditation, builds a different bridge.
What's astounding, though. And it comes back to 2012, where their calendar ends. This seems to go hand in hand, and the images and the resonances that are in there, it connects us directly with the larger life of our entire galaxy.
Yeah, it does.
That is like, so the most mundane and ordinary part of our experience connects us to the grandest element.
I think the deeper Mayan scholars are in unison in saying... the doomsday scenario about 2012 is a construct, and it's a fearful construct,
right.
And it's like whatever, you know, that's not really a place to put a lot of time and energy.
Right.
A more profound way to look at it would be like a changing of season.
Mm-hmm.
So on equinox or on solstice. And it is, 2012 is a solstice event. It's like a solstice event.
Yeah.
And it's like the change from fall to winter.
Well, and it's also
or
like...
from fall, from winter to spring.
It's like shifting from fourth to fifth.
Yep. And that's the way they're putting it.
And
they're saying...
The clutch is already depressed.
Mm. That's interesting, fourth to fifth, because the Mayans themselves are saying we're moving from the fourth world into the fifth. Or some are saying fifth to sixth. There's a change, a phase transition taking place that humanity will be called upon to exist in a different way with itself.
Yeah.
And you look around the world. And, you know, environmentally, I think we can all feel that there's a change coming.
You know, this is something that strikes me in this way, too, that when that environment shifts, I mean, we've been all about for the last 30, 40 years, we need to take care of the environment, and we do. But there's a way the environment also has been taking care of us, of course. And as it changes, as that environment changes... Well, lo and behold, we are experiencing profound changes. We have to adapt. I mean,
would we change without the fire?
Hmm.
You know, do comfortable entities, you know, in biological theories, species have a tendency to enjoy niche,
right?
Enjoy comfort,
not be flexible.
Yeah. So generally, happy people don't move a lot. You know what I mean? So I think the Mayan view, which involves a profound comprehension of negativity, you know, they looked at the previous era, the previous Bakhtun, as a very hellish, and they called it such.
Hmm.
They've been going through some hellish times, the Guatemalans.
Hmm.
You know, they are on a deep spiritual journey, right? So... I think there's a comprehension of what negativity is about. And I think to really grow and change, you want a positive sense about what's potential, but you also need a sense of getting away from something, a sense of a need to change.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to change our relationship with each other and the earth now.
Yes. Nicely put. What music is next for us?
Let's go to the end and play track 13.
Okay, that'll take a moment to dial in. You're listening to the Vibrational Voyage program on KKUP Cupertino, 91.5 FM. I apologize for my raspy voice here tonight.
this piece is called Quack. And the first piece represents the beginning. This piece represents... the hope of 2013, that we will learn how to live on the planet together.
Hmm.
We'll be right back.
net. Track is called Quawk. And the CD is of this wonderful work we've been talking about called Zolkin Sound. And my guest tonight is Bo Toyotti. And he's a good friend of the community and me personally. And I hope you've enjoyed our conversation and feel like you've found a little bit of a friend in what we've gone into here tonight. I hope it resonates for you, because I honestly feel like this experience, this vibe is going on everywhere. It's just like I think what this conversation, these types of conversations, what this program is really about, it's just kind of exploring, but really celebrating what that is, what the heck that is, what's going on. And I sense that very much in what your work is.
Oh, yeah. So this is an era in which we need to be aware and have these kinds of conversations. You know, if we have enough conversations about what I think they call in Zen satsang, reality, and we're seeking to... we're seeking to connect spiritually and find ourselves in an open-hearted way. That's a good thing. I'd like to mention a couple of the websites we're building.
Do, yeah.
The first one is called www.2012festivals.ning.com. It's a place to come and chat.
Oh, good. Say it again, slow.
www.2012festivals.ning.com.
Okay.
And then the next one is 2013festivals.ning.com. We want to do them both because 2012 is the moment that we're all about. 2013 is where we're going.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that.
2013 is the 260. Mm-hmm. So the whole Mayan system is built around the power of meshing those kinds of numbers. Mm. And what I think is powerful about 2013 is that 10 days after the solstice event in 2012, it's going to be 2013, you know? And, you know, I think what 2013 celebrates is that, you know, it's a changing of a spiritual day. Mm. Look at the amount of things we're aware of now on as a humanity, right, as a species. We know about a lot of stuff. It's time perhaps for us to grow up. And I think 2013 is about that. So www.2013festivals.ning.com.
It's a wonderful resonance and it's a very – it's playful message, but it's also something that's got its weight. It's definitely got its weight. The thing you're talking about specifically here, time to grow up, that is – that's – boy.
The kicker is that – the more we grow up, the more fun we really have. The more, you know, like adulthood. But that doesn't mean kill your other selves just because you're embracing, you know, who you are as a cosmic adult. Yeah. But we're going to care about each other in deeper ways.
Yes. And I think that seems to come along with it. Humanity as an entity, humanity taking care of humanity. If we are a single entity and we're not taking care of each other, then we're schizophrenic.
Right.
We're destroying
it. It seems
ourselves.
Simple, but just caring for each other without dogma.
Mm-hmm.
Like, leave the dogma to the previous. Leave the dogma to the age of Pisces, will you?
All right, we're gonna have to get out of here. I'm gonna give you just a little bit more of this music we've been playing tonight. What do you think? Last track 14.
Sure.
Okay. Tell them what it is, real quick.
This is Haruka, and so this is on the very last day. We want to think about being with each other.
All right. Thanks for listening tonight. You're listening to KKUP Cupertino 91.5 FM. Larry Grant is up next with, I'm sure, some great music, and Larry's always enjoyable presence. I hope you enjoy him tonight. Have a wonderful week. Plan to be back next Tuesday night with another journey. All right. Take care, everybody. God bless. Happy New Year. Happy 2012 and 2013. Thanks, Bo.
Thank you.